Welcome to the Deep Dive, the shortcut to understanding the research everyone will be talking about next week.
Today, we're looking at one of biology's slowest processes, colorectal cancer.
Right, a process that can take years, even decades, to unfold in a person. But the research we're diving into today models that entire step-by-step progression in a dish.
It's a critical challenge. The adenoma to carcinoma sequence, as it's called, just takes so long that studying it in real time is, well, it's basically impossible.
And we've always known it happens through this sequence of genetic hits, but actually recreating that in the lab seemed out of reach.
Until now.
Not anymore. And that's our mission for this deep dive, to explore how researchers use CRISPR-Cas9 to introduce the four big driver genes, APC, P53, KRAS, and SMAD4 one by one, into human intestinal organoids.
They essentially collapsed a decade of tumor evolution into a matter of weeks.
So before we get into the how, let's talk about the starting material, the organoid. What exactly is that?
They're amazing, really. They are these three-dimensional structures grown from human stem cells. You're essentially looking at a miniature, healthy piece of human intestine or colon right there in a culture dish.
A perfect model of normal tissue.
Exactly. And they stay genetically stable for a very long time. But, and this is the important part, they're completely dependent on their environment.
They're high maintenance.
You could say that. They need what we call stem cell niche factors to survive. A specific cocktail in the culture medium.
And that cocktail includes things like WNT, R-spondin, EGF.
Right, and an inhibitor called Noggin. Take any of those away, and a normal, healthy organoid will just die.
And that dependency, that's the key here. It's their Achilles heel.
It's the key that unlocks the entire experiment.
Okay, so let's unpack this. The goal is to watch a cell go from total dependence to complete autonomy, mirroring that classic tumor roadmap. First APC, then P53, then KRAS, and finally SMA2.
Step by step.
So CRISPR is great for making these targeted gene edits, but the efficiency, it's not 100%. I mean, you might only get a handful of successful mutants out of a million cells.
Right.
How do you find those rare cells? You can't just screen every single one.
And this is where the elegance of the study really shines. They didn't have to. They designed a system where the successful genetic modification was also the only path to survival.
So the mutation itself became the selection tool.
Exactly. Let's start with step one, inactivating APC.
This is the big one, the initiating event in most colorectal cancers. Mm-hmm. It's what turns the WNT growth pathway on and never lets it turn off.
Right. Normally, APC keeps that pathway quiet. So the researchers did something really simple. They just took the external WNT and R-spondin out of the culture medium.
Ah, so the control organoids, the ones that still need that external signal.
They died off almost immediately.
But the very few cells that had a successful APC knockout.
They survived. They now had their own internal, always-on WNT signal. They didn't need the external factors anymore, so they were the only ones left. A brilliant, simple selection.
That is an elegant way to exploit the cell's dependency. You force it to become the first stage of a tumor just to stay alive.
You got it. So now we have our initiated APCKO organoids.
Okay, next up is the classic roadblock that tumors have to get past.
Yeah.
The guardian of the genome, P53.
P53 is the cell's emergency brake. If it detects DNA damage or too much growth signaling, it either stops the cell cycle or triggers cell death.
So to select for cells that got rid of P53, they needed a way to slam on that brake in all the other cells.
Precisely. And they used a drug called Nutlin-3 to do it.
What does Nutlin-3 do?
It stabilizes P53. So for any cell that still has a working P53 protein, Nutlin-3 basically floods the system, activates that brake mechanism, and the cell dies.
So survival this time is all about tolerance. The organoids with functional P53 just couldn't handle the drug.
Their brakes locked up, basically. Only the cells that had successfully knocked out P53 were able to ignore the drug and keep growing. They were functionally selected.
All right, two steps down. Now for step three.
Yeah.
Activating KRAS. This is a huge oncogene.
A huge one. Here they're introducing the hyperactive KRAS G12D mutation. And KRAS is all about growth signaling, specifically the EGF pathway.
And in the normal organoid, that EGF signal comes from the outside, from the medium.
Right. So to select for cells that didn't need that external signal anymore, they, again, created a dependency crisis.
Yeah.
It was a two-pronged attack. First, they removed all the EGF from the medium, and then, just to be sure, they added an EGFR inhibitor called gefitinib.
The double lock. You're taking away the key, the EGF, and you're jamming the keyhole with the inhibitor.
Exactly. The only way a cell could survive that is if its KRAS switch was already permanently jammed in the on position internally. Pure factor independence.
The control cells must have just withered away.
They did. But the triple mutants with activated KRAS just kept on expanding.
Incredible. And that brings us to the final step, step four, knocking out SM84.
SM84 is a key part of the TGF-beta and BMP pathways. And you can think of those pathways as the ones that tell a cell, okay, stop proliferating now, it's time to differentiate.
They stop growing signals.
Exactly. And this is where you have to understand the normal culture conditions. The medium for healthy organoids contains an inhibitor called noggin.
Why do they need that?
To block those very signals. Noggin acts as a protective shield, blocking the BMP pathway so the stem cells can keep growing without being forced to differentiate.
Ah, okay. So if you knock out SM84...
The cell becomes deaf to those start-growing signals anyway. The signal can't get through. It doesn't need the protective shield anymore.
So the selection was just removing the shield?
Just removing noggin from the medium. The cells that still had functional SM84 responded to the now unblocked signal and stopped growing. Only the rare SM84 knockouts survived.
It's really remarkable. The entire history of cancer progression is just mirrored by taking away one survival factor after another from the dish.
The cells had to evolve to survive their new environment.
So now we have the quadruple mutants. KRAS is on, APC is gone, P53 is gone, SM84 is gone. What's the result of all that engineering?
The functional result is just astonishing autonomy.
So what do they require to live now? What was left in the medium?
That's the amazing part. Basically nothing. The quadruple mutants grew robustly without any of the four stem cell niche factors.
So no EGF, no WNT, no R-spondin, no noggin.
All gone. And they were completely resistant to Nutlin-3, of course.
Wow. That transition from a cell that needs this complex cocktail just to live to a completely self-sufficient entity that can thrive on its own, that is the very definition of a cancer cell in vitro.
It really is, and it shows that just targeting those four pathways, WNT, EGF, P53, and TGF-beta, is enough to drive a normal human intestinal stem cell to complete self-sufficiency.
Okay, but autonomy is only one part of the story. Cancer is also defined by chaos, genetic chaos. Yeah. Did they see when that kicked in?
They did. That was a major goal, to pinpoint the moment the cell goes from neat, organized growth to, you know, wild chromosomal instability, or CIN.
Aneuploidy, right, where the cells have random abnormal numbers of chromosomes.
Exactly. And they watched it happen in real time with live cell imaging.
So what did they see after just the first step, with only APC loss?
The single APCKO organoids were a little unstable. They showed minor issues, like frequently having an extra copy of chromosome 7.
Which is interesting because...
Because trisomy 7 is something we see in actual low-grade colorectal adenomas in patients. So right from step one, the model was mirroring the human disease.
So minor errors, but not full-blown chaos yet.
Mm-hmm.
When did that happen? Where was the tipping point?
The tipping point was the combined loss of APC and P53.
The double hit.
That's the one. If APC loss takes the steering wheel off, P53 loss removes the brakes. The second they created the APC at P53KO organoids, they saw this, well, this dramatic explosion in aneuploidy.
It just unleashed mayhem.
Complete mayhem. On the live cell imaging, they saw a huge increase in massive mitotic errors, things like anaphase bridges, where chromosomes are literally ripped apart during division, lagging chromosomes just left behind. The machinery just broke.
That's a massive insight. It implies that by the time a cell loses both APC and P53, the real genetic damage is already done. The genome is already chaotic.
Yes. And what's more, when they added the next mutations, KRAS and SMB4, it didn't really increase the percentage of those errors any further.
So that double knockout is the switch.
It seems to be the critical switch that initiates that extensive chromosomal instability.
Okay, so the cells are autonomous. They're genetically chaotic.
Yeah.
But can they form an actual tumor? That's the final test, right?
It's the ultimate test. They took these engineered organoids and transplanted them into immunodeficient mice, a xenotransplant.
Let's start with the triple mutants, KRAS, APC, and P53 knockout.
So these did engraft, but their growth was pretty limited.
And what did they look like under a microscope?
They looked benign, precancerous. They formed small structures that strongly resembled human adenomas, you know, polyps, regular glandular patterns. Not very invasive.
So those three mutations are enough to make a cell unstable and self-sufficient, but not enough to make it truly aggressive and lethal.
It seems not. Which brings us to the quadruple mutants.
Adding the SMAD4 loss.
And that was the key. The addition of that fourth mutation, SMAD4 loss, unlocked full malignancy. These were highly aggressive. They formed visible tumors in almost all of the injections.
And the visual difference was clear.
Night and day. The quad mutants formed these large, highly proliferative tumors, and crucially, they showed all the features of invasive carcinoma.
Meaning they were spreading.
Exactly. You could see isolated tumor cells or small clusters breaking away from the main tumor and invading the surrounding tissue.
So SMAD4 loss seems to be what unzips the cells from their neighbors and lets them start to migrate.
That seems to be its role here. In the colon model, they even saw frequent tumor budding and invasion deep into the underlying muscle tissue. It's the full picture of an aggressive, invasive cancer.
And this came from a normal human stem cell, just by adding four specific mutations.
In sequence, it's sufficient to drive that cell all the way to a highly aggressive carcinoma. And it was the same whether they started with small intestine or colon organoids, so it seems to be a universal pathway for CRC.
What an incredible piece of work. This deep dive has really shown us a functional blueprint for how colorectal cancer progresses, linking those specific drivers, APC, P53, KRAS, and SMAD4, to factor independence, genetic chaos, and finally lethal invasion.
It really has, and it brings up a very important question, I think, for future strategy.
Which is?
Well, we've established that the loss of just APC and P53 is enough to kick off this massive, extensive chromosomal instability. The genome becomes highly mutable very early on.
Right, at the adenoma stage, before it's even considered fully cancerous.
Exactly. So if that genetic chaos is already in full swing so early, how effective can our current drugs really be when they're designed to target a later stage mutation like KRAS?
You're saying the cell has already become so genetically unstable by then that it can easily evolve resistance.
It's a real possibility. This model gives us an incredible opportunity to test new therapies designed to block that critical tipping point, that shift from a stable adenoma to the chaotic APCP53 state, to intervene long before the cells acquire the full four-step invasion playbook.
A fascinating and critical piece of research that could completely reshape our timeline for intervention. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.